Welcome back to the next interview training here in the Quality of Bats Academy. I'm really, really excited about our next guest. This is someone who both Spring and I have been really excited to have on for some time now. Coach Matt Deggs, current coach for Sam Houston State. Coach, you played 2 years at Alvin CC and then you went to Northwood State before a career in pro ball. What I'd love to do before we talk about your philosophy, your framework, your approach to coaching, well, first I'd like to say thank you for coming on and talking some baseball.
Yeah, Mark, I appreciate you guys having me on. We're big believers and supporters of what you and Spring do, and love your mindset, love your mentality, and just a couple of grinders getting after it. And so, big honor for me to be on here with you.
That's great. Before we talk about your philosophy, your framework, what it is and how you communicate to, say, a player who just joins the program, can you talk to us a little bit about how you got to where you are today? So you can start as early as you like.
It's been a wild journey, you know. I like to tell everybody every time I speak, you know, I've been around the block not once but twice, and been to the highest of the highs, and have also fallen butt over tea kettle all the way down the entire mountain, and everything in between. And so have been really blessed my entire life to get to play this great game, and then, you know, not only get to play, get to coach, and just a lot of doors have opened for me throughout my career. And I think starting with meeting Rob Childress when I was a player at Northwood, he was our pitching coach, and him and I formed a friendship really fast, and then getting to be on Dave Van Horn's staff at Northwestern State and pick up my master's degree and coach alongside him and Rob Childress, and then got the opportunity to be a head coach at the age of 25 and at Texarkana Junior College, and had a great 5-year run there. Just really a great place for a young coach to cut his teeth, because you're not just a coach there. You were the head trainer. I was the athletic director, the scheduler, in charge of all field maintenance, in charge of the apartments, you name it. I was in charge of it. So you wear a lot of hats at a job like that. And
right.
Coach Van Horn called in the summer of 2002 and offered me a chance to be a recruiting coordinator and hitting coach in the SEC at Arkansas. I was only around 30, 31 years old at the time. And we had a great run there. SEC champions, went to Omaha. And then Rob Childress got the job at A&M, and him and I were best friends. And we packed up and flew down there together on June 28th, 2005. And we spent 6 years there. I was the associate head coach, ran the offense, and headed up a lot of the recruiting, personnel, et cetera. And, 5 Big 12 championships later, I wasn't there. I had coached the team that went to Omaha. I'd been fired right before they went. And so we had a really good run there as well, and sat out of the game 430 days by my own doing. I was fired. My life was in the gutter. It was a mess. And, hooked on alcohol and just really living for the things of this world. And God humbled me real quick and ultimately took a long time, because I'm hard-headed, ultimately got my attention. And there was one school in the entire country that would touch me, and that was UL Lafayette. One of the greatest men I've ever been blessed to meet, Tony Robichaud, is a man that believes in second chances. He's a man that builds other men up. And went in there and had probably, just 2.5 of the most remarkable years of my life. And culminating in, the first mid-major ever in 2014 to finish the regular season as the consensus number one ranked team in all 5 polls, and a couple of different years leading the nation in offense. And look up in 2015, and what started with a text to the AD here at Sam Houston State resulted in an interview, and then ultimately me getting the job here. And so it was a chance for us to come back home. We grew up 1.5 hours from here. We grew up in the Houston area, and so it's great to be back in Huntsville. I love the kids I get to coach every day. Just, I'd say 3 years ago, we hit the personnel jackpot with just a bunch of blue-collar kids and hard workers and great families that understand what it means to work and be held accountable. And, you know, I look up and this place is running itself right now. I try to just stay out of the way.
Right. That's really interesting. Yeah, staying out of the way. You know, oftentimes when I'm working with kids and I get to see how they are being taught peak performance on the field, whether it's from their coach or from their parent, it seems like baseball, at least just from appearances, seems like the most overcoached sport on the planet. And it's
and
you know, it's frustrating at times, but I think for me, when I'm giving private lessons, I it gives me less anxiety knowing that I can take this kid aside and teach him some tips and tricks, a framework, a foundation, an approach to kind of help simplify the, you know, help him filter what he's being taught on the field by a coach and have a framework to kind of simplify the game. You know, I did some research from the performance with the Bearcats from 2015, 2016, 2017. Just in terms of the record, there seemed to be a jump or something must have happened, a shift between 2015 and 2016. You guys were 31-28 in 15, and then you jumped to 42-22 in 16, if I'm not mistaken, and then in 2017 you guys were 44-23. What was the shift? Was it just the idea of you staying out of the way? It's culture? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember in the summer of 14, I took over the job here. And so coming into a new program, especially one, you know, David Pierce, who's now the head coach at Texas, he had an incredible amount of success here. And then Coach Johnson, who's a legend in the game, spent 20-plus years at A&M. He had a great five-year run here, you know, before Coach Pierce. And so when we got here in 2015, you know, it was a fun experience. I got to come in and we didn't try to change a whole lot. We just kind of, it was an older ball club. A lot of the players that had really done well had been drafted or graduated from the year before. And so it was an older ball club of guys that didn't have a ton of experience. And we came in with a mission that first year that we're going to have fun and we're going to make sure they have a great experience. And that was year one. And then, like I said, we recruited and hit a personnel jackpot and really started hammering our culture and, you know, getting guys to understand where the bar is and where the standard is. And you look up, and, you know, 2.5 years later, and, you know, I'm sitting on a ball club right now that's ranked in the top 20 preseason and top 25 and a team that's gone to a super regional and won a few championships, a team that has a 3.4 team GPA, 5 straight semesters over a 3, 70-plus community service hours already, and we haven't had a guy late for anything in 2.5 years. Yeah. And, you know, that's why when I speak, I say culture eats strategy for breakfast. You know, I didn't come up with that, but I really love that. Peter Drucker said that, and it's something that's really, really true in the fact that strategy or wins and losses or living for today is all of that's super temporary, but culture can have everlasting impacts on a kid. And our job first and foremost is to develop men and then to develop players. And like you said, there's a lot of overcoaching, a lot of reinventing stuff. You know, I call a lot of those guys good idea fairies. you know, the game has been played and been played successfully for 150, however many years. And, you know, so baseball is baseball, man. Kids will put themselves in a position physically and mentally to be successful. Your job is just to guide that and make sure that they're prepared for everything they're going to encounter.
Right.
And, I think, you know, our biggest thing that we talk about every day is, hey, let's have fun, play hard and keep getting better.
Right.
And we can check every one of those boxes after every game and after every practice. I think we're going to be pretty successful.
Right. Yeah. By the way, I love that idea. Good idea, fairies. That's great. So you mentioned Peter Drucker. He wrote one of my favorite books, Managing Oneself. I remember he had a quote. I'm paraphrasing here, but I think he did mention something about the importance of measuring things. What gets measured gets progresses or something like that. But Now, you talked about one of your kind of core values as a coach and as a program and as the team's culture is, it's having fun and essentially kind of, just focusing on the things that you can't control. How do you have a strategy, or do you think that measuring these things are important? Do you have an approach to measuring how well a player, say, adopts these approaches when they join your program?
I think the way that you measure culture is by things that happen off the field. What type of service are we doing out in the community? How is our GPA? What's our effort look like in the weight room? What's our effort look like in practice? How are we serving and helping others? I think you can measure in those ways. I think you're gonna play with fire when you start trying to measure results on the field. Our big thing here is results are temporary. Your commitment, your work ethic, your love for your teammates, all of that's, forever. And so we do things a little bit different here, a little bit opposite of what common logic would success or would suggest. We don't put a lot of onus on the scoreboard. We don't put a lot of onus on the stat sheet. Everything is about, living and working and playing for the team and knowing your job, duty, your function, and taking tremendous pride in whatever we ask you to do, and then going out and executing it. And if we can, like I said, if we can play hard, we can punch the time card and outwork everybody, we're going to let the chips fall where they may.
I was listening to when I first heard about you, I was talking with Spring. I think we were in Huntington Beach. We just finished dinner, and he said, "Man, you got to interview this guy." He pulls up a YouTube link and he shows an interview, a speech after a game, post-game interview, where you talked about essentially what your team's philosophy was, what your coaching philosophy was. You talked about second chances. You talked about transactional coaching versus transformational coaching, and your transformation from the latter to the former. Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about where that speech, where the origins of that speech was from, and what
You know, it's
parents did you
crazy,
to know that?
Mark. It's crazy the way it came about is we were in the school and conference's first ever super regional, and we had made history by beating Texas Tech at their, in Lubbock in the regional, and doing it through the losers bracket. And so we went into Florida State fully expecting to win that super regional. And we in game one come out, they've got an All-American on the mound, Tyler Holton, and we have sucked them into our game exact that we had played all year. We've got a 3-run lead in the seventh. We had spun the game out of control a little bit by shortening the field down and then going back and lengthening the field and creating some chaos. And so we're up 3 with 2 outs in the seventh, and you gotta suppose in the back of your mind a little bit that if we get that game, there's going to be a panic button that's going to get pushed, and we're going to have a really, really good shot of walking through the gates of Omaha. And they have an All-American leadoff hitter, Taylor Walls, shortstop. This kid will play in the big leagues. He lays down a 2-out drag bunt off Big D, Dakota Mills, big right-handed pitcher that kind of was a utility guy for us, out of the bullpen. We could start him on Tuesdays, bring him out of the bullpen in big games. So he's in there in the seventh. He's Big D for obvious reasons. He doesn't move around too good. Taylor Walls drops the drag bunt and beats Dakota to first base. And then they did something I've never seen. They racked up 4 straight 2-out line drive singles to center field. And a couple of them with 2 strikes. And so they just went out and earned it and got it all back, tied the game, and then walked us off in the ninth. And we didn't flinch, didn't blink, didn't back up. We really thought we'd come back and win the next 2. And the next morning, I was in the hotel doing my devotional, and my wife was sleeping, in the bed. And the Lord really put on my heart, tell your story. And I could feel him just nudging at me to say that, or, to tell the story. And, still being arrogant and prideful and greedy and all the things of this world, I thought immediately we're going to go to Omaha. And I said, Lord, I'll tell the whole thing as soon as we get there. And so we're supposed to start a game at noon. And long story short, 8 hours worth of rain delays. My starter, who was an All-American himself, got hot four different times. And they came out and just put it on us. And it wasn't until I was in the dugout, it was 16, 17, 18, 19 to nothing. Mm-hmm. And the light bulb went off that you want this story right now. And so I had some players and myself that stood up in the midst of defeat and proclaimed the glory of God and the fact that all things are possible and that there's no greater honor than the sacrifice for a brother, two of the tenets that this program's founded on. And it touched a lot of hearts and changed a lot of minds and opened a lot of eyes. And, you know, 40, 50 million views later, it's just been overwhelming, the response that I've gotten through emails, texts, phone calls, that you've helped change my life, you've helped change my outlook, you know, you've helped me go from transactional to transformational, and which led me to write the book 15 to 28, and that has kind of taken off and impacted a lot of people as well. And so I found myself on a really, really big stage that I once thought was going to be baseball related, but God had other plans. And so I've been able to get out and share my story across the country. And there's a lot of people out there that are starved, hungry, thirsty to hear that type of good news. And so it's just been a true blessing for me to get to be able to do those things.
Right. Yeah. You know, you do see that often. You do see the transactional coach, the fair weather coach, the what have you done for me lately type coach.
Certainly.
How would you communicate to a coach who, say, may be a transactional coach but may not be aware, you know, who's competitive, who's driven, yeah, but maybe has gone away, has gone off track for why he got into coaching in the first place? And then on the other hand, how would you advise or give advice to a player who's trying to compete at the highest level, who's dealing with, say, a fair weather guy?
Well, look it, man. And it's not anybody's fault. It's just the way a lot of highly successful athletes and coaches and people are super, super competitive. Right. And they've got a warrior's heart mentality, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think the biggest thing that I learned, and it's one word from sitting out of the game 430 days, is perspective. And a lot of the things that we covet are all temporary, man. Championship rings, wins, losses, trophies, this or that. You know, nobody's going to remember that you hit 380 as a junior. Nobody's going to remember you've got, you know, 12 championship rings stored away. Nobody cares about that stuff. What they will remember, though, is the type man you are, is the type teammate you are, is the type coach, friend, brother, husband, you know, dad. All of these things that have eternal implications, that's what people remember. They remember your loyalty, your work ethic, your commitment. They remember the fact that you're the same guy every day, that you don't ebb and flow based off results. And so I think the biggest thing that I learned was perspective. And trust me, it's super easy to fall back into what have you done for me lately, and you know, getting upset over the fact that you don't hit, or that we're not winning the way we should, et cetera. But I think you got to step back and put everything in perspective and say, are you wanting to turn out wins, or are you wanting to turn out men?
Right.
And yeah, I can answer that question unequivocally. I want to turn out quality men.
Right. Yeah. That's very perspective. Very, very important. You know, I would say that's the advice I would give a player. You know, because I feel like just how it would be easy, it's easy for a coach to fall back into that, like you said, that warrior mindset, and to get mad over certain things that, you know, long-term macro perspective, maybe it would be best if he didn't. It's really easy for a player to take all that for personally and to think that, you know, that this is a personal thing instead of just this is about running a program as best as they possibly can. But yeah, I agree. Perspective is
well, I think the biggest thing, Mark, is when you can teach players and coaches to not tie their identity to what they do, and instead and tie that identity to who you are as a man and who you are in Christ and who he created you to be. There's a certain amount of freedom and liberation and living a life that's not tied to anything of this world, but rather tied to who you were created to
be. For sure. Yeah.
And when you can gain that perspective, trust me, everything else is gravy.
Yeah. The pressure's off once you realize it's not about you.
The pressure's off, dude.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Especially as a player, man, when you can get players to realize that, the pressure's off and then it's fun.
So let's try to dive into the meat and potatoes here before we let you go. I love talking about hitting approach tips, tricks, little things, little adjustments that members in the academy can apply, actionable items that members can apply to achieve some sort of progress. So let's talk a little bit about your approach. When the season starts, or let's say when the fall season starts, and you've got a new class coming in, how do you communicate what it is that players need to be working on, strengths and weaknesses, what they need to be expecting in terms of what their expectations are going to be when they're at the plate?
Well, you know, like I've said before a little earlier, we're a little different than a lot of people in the fact that we function inside of what we call a pack mentality. And so guys that are coming into our program already understand who they are, what they are, and what their job duty or function is. And so inside of the pack, everybody's got a different job duty or function. So the strength of the pack is a wolf, but the strength of a wolf is the pack. So really and truly, there's no such thing as a lone wolf. We all need each other in order to take down this buffalo. And the buffalo can be a metaphor for whatever you're facing, a Friday night starter, you know, working to win a championship, trying to take down the best of the best. Maybe it's something in your life, doesn't matter. And so nothing comes before team. We've got to be able to work together and function together as a unit. So inside of this pack, everybody's got a job, duty, or function, and there's four different types of players inside the pack. We've got runners, hitters, bombers, and ball players. And so the biggest teach for us in the fall is teaching guys what parameters we have on you and what our expectation is of you as a runner, hitter, bomber, or ball player. And then developing guys based off their skill sets and not just trying to cookie cut everybody.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Having players understand what their strengths and weaknesses are will dictate what their roles are going to be throughout the season.
Certainly.
What that sounds like. Yeah.
Certainly. You know, Joe Torre said this about Derek Jeter early in his career. He said when Jeter learned his limits, he became limitless.
Oh.
And so I think too many times for the sake of continuity or the sake of efficiency, coaches make a one-size-fits-all practice plan or model or plan. And we're in a game, you know, just like every other sport, where one size doesn't fit all. I mean, the offensive linemen for the Patriots today aren't working on the same things as Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at the makeup of your ball club, and for us, like I said, it's runners, hitters, bombers, and ball players. Our bombers aren't going to be doing the same things as the runners, and the runners aren't going to be doing the same things as the hitters, and the ball players aren't going to be doing the same things as the bombers.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has different value on your ball club. And I think when you really put parameters and explain what's expected, and then you nurture that, you water that, you grow it like a plant in the ground, kids mm-hmm. develop underneath you, and they blossom out of those parameters.
Right. Is there anything specific that you talk about in terms of mechanics or approach that hitters need to be focused on throughout the season?
Not really.
Yeah.
You know, our thing is this, and if you look back and if you trace our offenses back, I mean, we've put together teams and offenses that have led the country in a lot of different categories
mm-hmm.
at various times, and
yeah.
Had two straight years at UL where we led the nation in offense, and nobody believes me when I tell them this, but we didn't watch video one time during that 2-year stretch.
That's really, really interesting. For
us, you know, it's all about the moment of truth, and it's all about the confrontation. And you can take the swing and everything else with it and throw it out the window at the moment of truth. At the moment of truth, it's all about having the willingness to drop your stuff and throw down with somebody and throw down with what we call violence of action. Just violent, on time, bat speed, through extension. And, you know, having the ability to get in the box with attitude and some rhythm and flow and expect to hit every pitch, being on time to the fastball, hunting the fastball out over the white and getting the bat head out through extension. If you can be on time to the fastball, and you can dominate the fastball. It's going to put you on time to everything else. And our thing is competing through the entire dish through extension. Mm-hmm. And there's a multitude of ways to get to that point. But if you want to hit, you got to hit. And I think our guys do an incredible job of punching the card every day and outworking everybody.
Awesome. That is great. So you mentioned, you mentioned moment of truth. You mentioned rhythm and flow, be on time, violence of action. I think I missed one. What was the second one that you said?
Well, to hit, you've got to expect to hit every pitch.
Okay.
And too many guys react to hit. Well, when you reach a certain level, man, you're swinging. I'm swinging, I'm not swinging. It doesn't work the other way around.
Right.
If you want to try to wait and decide if you're swinging, that dude's going to take you lunch money and make you like it. And yeah. So you've got to be able to flip the switch in your brain that I'm offensive. Right. I am offensive. I am offensive. I'm hitting.
Yeah. Yeah. What we say is it's a strike until it's not. It's going to be a strike until it's not. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, same way to say the same thing, or a different way to say the same thing.
Exactly. Okay, I just have a couple more questions here, Coach, and then I'll get you out of here. I really appreciate your time. You mentioned that you had some experience in just simply the recruiting process. What do you look for in, say, a high school player who obviously wants to play at the next level? What are some things that a player does that would catch your eye or would give him the best shot of playing at Sam Houston?
Well, to play for us, you've got to be, Mark, what we call an OKG, our kind of guy. And we recruit OKGs over talent any day of the week. We're looking for guys that'll, mama's not flipping them a Gatorade. We're looking for guys that go flip on the water hose and drink out of the faucet. Nice. And, that's kind of that old school mentality. And, guys that can run, 6'8" minimum, got really good arm action, very versatile, love to compete and play the game hard, play the game the right way. Obviously, that's what we're looking for offensively. And then on the bump, guys that can command the fastball to both sides of the plate, have the makings of a pitch to put you in bed with, and can fill their position, hold runners, and want the baseball. Mm-hmm. And so when we see those things, we're not going to roll out the red carpet or anything like that. We're gonna map out our entire program for you, your mama, and your daddy. And if you want to be a part of something bigger than yourself, where you'll earn everything you get, there will absolutely be nothing given to you. And you want to be a David in a land full of Goliaths, then come on. We'd love to have you.
What? Now, you talked a little bit about how your approach, for example, with the bombers, the runners, and the ball players, seems like a different kind of approach. It keeps it fun, keeps it light, and it kind of gives a player a visual of what the roles are, but it's unique. Is there anything else, say, that you do as a coach or what your program does overall that another program or another coach might think is unique, different, or maybe even strange?
Well, the thing about the pack is, and it's a subset of our culture, right? So inside of the pack way, which is our culture, you want to raise the bar and set the standard. And then you've got to build an identity. And kids crave an identity. Kids crave to be part of something bigger than themselves. And people crave relationships, and that's what the pack brings. And then after that, we bring an organized and united message, AAIT, attitude, approach, intensity, and toughness, and how are we going to climb this mountain? And then we build this culture of overachievement by becoming the absolute best at the stuff nobody else cares about. And then we punctuate that by creating an atmosphere of family and trust. And that's only known to those that have taken part, made a significant impact, and have finished. And so that's our culture. And that's where the pack fits inside of that, is that's our identity, man. That's what guys take tremendous pride in being a part of. But as far as Mark doing something, that people think, we don't stretch. We never have. And
interesting.
I think stretching's overrated. Mm-hmm. If me and you went and played pick up basketball, baseball, football right now, I'm sure you wouldn't stretch. If we decide to get in a wrestling match or a boxing match or a fight, you wouldn't stretch. You would just go get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by the time you go through our early work and by the time you put the amount of work in before a game starts or practice starts the way we do, there's no need to stretch. And mm-hmm. so, and we do so with relatively, you know, I can't think of anybody that's been injured in a long time as far as a leg or anything like that.
Right. And,
you know, like we tell our guys, wolves don't stretch before they go run down their prey, do they?
That's true. That's so true. You know, what you're
saying. Hey, now you've got to keep this in mind. I'm speaking specifically of the position players. Now, pitchers
right.
are on their own program with Coach Sirianni.
Right. No, I get it. You know, this is a lot of the stuff that you're saying makes a lot of sense. And it's kind of funny that you mentioned Peter Drucker's book or Peter Drucker in general, you know, one of the greatest business managers of all time. It kind of seems like. And again, I don't know if this is the best analogy, but it almost looks like you run the program almost like a business in the sense that you're aligning your goals that you have for the ball club with your core values. And, you know, if those goals
Certainly.
Don't align with those core values, it's not a goal. It's not an intention. It's not a focus. And then it seems like, and you know, the position players not stretching seems like a perfect example of just testing the untested assumptions. Like why is it that we as a culture, as a, you know, within the baseball or sports in general, why do we assume that stretching is an essential thing to do when again in nature you don't see this? This comes back to testing and trying new things, and that's a really good example. I got one more question, actually two quick questions, and then we'll follow this up. You know, we've been here at Quality Bats Academy. We've been posting swings of our members, swings of other people who we enjoy looking at, who have decent swings but are working hard on Facebook. And it's amazing. It's amazing how quickly you see the critical comments come in. What I wanted to talk to you about is, do you have any advice for players who are dealing essentially with, you know, what would be known as haters?
You can't pay attention to that stuff, man. If you listen, there's an old saying, man, if you listen to the fans, if you listen to the people that paid to get in, you're going to ultimately wind up sitting with them. And
yeah.
So you got to toot your own thing, dude. And nobody will understand truly what it's like until they stand in there, and nobody will truly understand what it's like to run a group of hitters or whatever it is until you've been in charge of an entire unit. And it's one thing to coach a guy individually. It's another thing to coach an entire unit of 20 hitters and deal with 5-6 of them that are under 200, and then mm-hmm. Deal with, you know, the guy that's hitting the ball hard right at everybody. You know, coaching hitting and coaching a unit when you have to win is all mindset related. And
for
so
sure.
You can't listen to the noise. You gotta, don't pay attention. Don't read anything. Don't listen to anything. The only people that matter to you are the guys inside this circle. And, if you can block those things out, especially, you know, it's easy to block them out when you're doing good. It's harder to block them out when you're doing, or it's easy to block them out when you're not doing good. It's harder to block it out when you're doing great, because
right.
you want to see your press clippings and this and that. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's something that I live by. It's an incredible quote. And it says that the same people that will applaud your coronation will also be cheering the loudest that you're beheading.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really resonates with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only people that matter are your family and you know, the guys that are closest to you and your teammates, your brothers. And, you know, block out the noise, put your head down, grind, stay humble, and keep working, man.
Yeah. And then, you know, hopefully throughout that process, you have an impact, positive impact on those around you, which is what it seems like you guys are doing. Coach, I got one last question. What's your definition of success in baseball?
You know, playing the game for me, and this is what it's always been, is respecting the game, deserving success, playing the game the right way. That's something that I will defend until the day I die, is playing the game with passion, playing the game the right way. if we can come out and say that we out-hustled you, we out-passioned you, we outworked you, and we respected the game at the same time, then as far as I'm concerned, we won.
Beautiful. Coach, again, just want to say thank you so much for your time. I know you mentioned the book, 1528. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, what that outline is like? And then maybe we can talk about how parents, if they wanted to reach out to you, how the best way to do that as well.
Sure, sure. 15 to 28 is something that I sat down and wrote after the press conference went viral like it did, and I saw the outpouring, and I saw the amount of people that reached out. And so I wrote my testimony, and it's just kind of God's story through my life, and it's a redemption story. And it's had an incredible impact already, and it's something that's kind of taken off. You can access the book on my website, CoachDeggs.com. You can get a hard copy ordered to, sent to you. It's $15.28. You can pick it up on Amazon and download it to your Kindle. You can do all of those things through the website. And then at the same time I did that, for as much speaking as I've done on my testimony throughout the last 10, 12 years, I've probably traveled and spoken the most on our culture and the pack mentality and the pack offense, and not just the baseball guys, but businesses, churches, schools, corporations, you name it. And so what I did was, in 6 videos that you can also access on the website, it's the pack video system, I map out our mentality, our culture, and kind of show you the blueprint of how to build a team, how to create and sustain success through that, and how to do so through an unbreakable culture.
That's awesome. So that's CoachDeggs.com?
CoachDeggs.com.
Okay, and are you on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at all?
Twitter, CoachDeggs, 2-8.
Okay, 2-8. Okay, perfect. Yeah, and we'll link all that down below this audio as well. Coach, thank you so much. This has been
Mark.
Yeah, this has been great.
You made it easy, man. You did a great job. I appreciate everything you and Spring do, and God bless you guys.
All right, thank you so much.
Thanks, buddy.
All right.